Welcome to the America's Job Scene podcast. Our goal is to equip economic developers with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. Each week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues that are challenging our industry. We believe that when leaders get stronger, communities thrive. Hey everyone, welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast, powered by Consultant Connect and sponsored by Research on Investment. I am joined today by Marva Bryan, who is a tax incentive analyst at the Development Authority of Fulton County, and she's a member of the IEDC Board of Directors. Marva supports the Development Authority's strategic plan and annual budget and manages all financial records, reports, and analyses. She also oversees the state economic development grants and analyzes potential job creation and retention for Fulton County, on top of also guiding investments in projects and programs. Marva grew up in Jamaica, and she has made her way to the Atlanta region over the course of her career. Welcome, Marva. I am so excited to have you on the podcast today. Now, before we dive in too deep into economic development, we know that a lot of economic developers didn't necessarily go to school for it. They happen to fall into the career. So I am really curious to know, what was your plan when you went to college?
When I went to college, my plan was to become an accountant. Well, my original plan was to become, I wanted to go to hotel management school because I didn't realize it then. I really do enjoy working with people and serving people. And so hotel management was the thing that I wanted to do. That didn't work out. And my teacher, this was on graduation day, my teacher says, you should go into administration. I think that was, and had not a clue. But I loved accounting. And so I love working with numbers. And so I thought I'd be an accountant.
Nice. Well, then you haven't really strayed too far from the plan. You're not a straight up accountant, but you do work with a lot of numbers.
Right. And I did work as an accountant for about half of my career. So I had the opportunity to work as an accountant and really enjoyed working as an accountant for the first half of my career with a company called British Airways. And then I moved to Atlanta. And that accounting degree actually got me into economic development. So I owe my accounting degree to being here working in economic.
That is awesome. How did you make your way from British Airways to economic development?
Well, I should have left British Airways a long time before I did, but I am a keeper. If there is something that I'm doing and I absolutely love it, I will stay in it. And one of my bosses said, you've been here for so long, you should have been gone a long time ago. So after nearly 20 years, during the, I don't know if you recall, back in the day, in the 80s, you look like you're way too young to remember that. The oil crisis created a huge economic challenge for the airlines. And we were going through some transition. And just like the airlines are doing today, they were offering payouts, buyouts for people to leave. And so I thought, this is a good opportunity. I need to leave anyway. And they're going to pay me to leave. And so I took the opportunity and I left. And I've always wanted to leave New York. When I went to New York, I was only going to be there for 5 years. And I ended up being there for 20 plus years. And so I decided that I would look for another place. I would move closer to home, which is Jamaica. And I landed in Atlanta.
That's really awesome. That's that they paid you to leave and then you led your way to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Into this amazing career.
Ah, I love that. I love hearing, and I love sending out those stories of how in economic development. So once again, you have a very unique way of how you got there.
Everyone that I know didn't start out saying, I want to be an economic developer.
No, and that's why we asked that question, because there was at one point in time, there was economic developer school, but for the most part, people fall into the career. So that's super cool. So just switching gears just a little bit, let's talk about the year 2020, right? What a year it has already been. Ooh. We're a little over halfway through. And we've experienced a pandemic. We've experienced an economic halt, restart, possibly back to a halt with what is happening in various areas of the country. We have political divisiveness and social unrest related to systemic racism. So I would love to know, what has been your biggest personal leadership challenge as you have navigated all of the things that this year has delivered?
personal leadership challenge is having enough resources, especially time. Time, it's been so challenging. I've always kept busy and I do a lot of things in the community, a lot of work outside of my regular job. But I thought working from home would give me time to do more things, and it hasn't. I have not had the time. And I haven't had the time to do some of the things that I really want to do, which is provide care in the community that I live in and serve in.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah,
that's been my biggest challenge. I wish I had more time.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me how such an economic crisis, right? We hear about people that they have too much time and they don't know how to fill their time, whereas in economic development, we get just bombarded. Times of crisis are to run. Mm-hmm. So when we're thinking about how you're navigating everything that this year has offered us, what is your strongest personal characteristic and how has that played into your leadership over time in general, but especially this year?
Just give that a good thought. Compassion. Mm-hmm. Compassion in that I've had to think about how I deal with all the challenges that we've been faced with this year. And it's both on a personal level and on a business, you know, work environment level. And the one thing I think about, because it has stayed with me, because I'm not unfamiliar with, of course I'm not unfamiliar. I'm the mother of a son. And it's just my nature to reach out to young men, young women who just seem to need a little bit more hugs, a little bit more caring, a little bit more attention. And in our environment at work, we consider ourselves family. We really get along well. There are only four of us on our internal team, and then we have a legal team that have three. And we have three African-American women that work on our team, and we all have sons. And so where we've worked together and managed all the challenges we have with COVID-19, when the social unrest started, none of us, it seemed, had words to speak. And I had the opportunity to participate in one march in my community. And I left there feeling alone because we weren't talking to each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were there for one purpose, but I didn't know anyone there. And a lot of the people seemed to have come in groups and nobody could see that I'm looking around and I'm nodding and I'm trying to, and there was no conversation. And I thought, and we're Christian. So that's another thing. And so that forced me to think about where we are, where we were, and how did it happen that we're not talking more to each other about what is happening around us? And I realized that we weren't doing it in our office, and yet we are close-knit. We really love each other. We care about each other. We support each other. And so I felt compelled that I had to do that. And in that thought process, I realized I had to be compassionate. I had to, knowing how the rest of the three Black women, and well, actually there are four Black women in our overall team, and we all have Black boys. And the rest of our team are white, and they all have children, but we haven't been able to talk about how we feel about what's going on and the fears. And how everybody's been talking about how their mothers have been saying, and fathers, how they have to educate their sons, especially, and how to behave when they come in contact with the police, and the fear, and how we're dealing with it today when it's right in our faces and our children are dealing with it. And so I felt that I had to think about how I presented it, how I asked the question. And I'd heard it before. Sometimes we have to give people permission to speak however it comes out and not be offended because it doesn't hit our ears correctly. And so that's what I did. I talked about my disappointment that as family, we couldn't talk about it, but it was okay for them to say, how are you doing today? How do you feel? How, my son's name is Gregory. How is Gregory? And so that was how we did it. And we got through that conversation, and that conversation led to some really awesome action items that our organization took. They showed their compassion for the community that we serve. But it was always a difficult conversation. It was a challenging conversation. And so I learned that compassion can cross all boundaries. And I'm glad I was raised that way.
I can feel the compassion in you, and I can see it in your face as we are talking, even though it's over Zoom and it's virtual. Marva, I want to commend you for having the courage to bring up that conversation. And as a white woman, I am trying to become really comfortable being uncomfortable and learning. But for you as a Black woman, it takes a ton of courage to put really into words how you are experiencing your life. So if you don't mind me asking, how did that conversation go, and what are some of the action items that your organization is moving forward with?
The conversation went better than I thought. It became easier to express myself. I'm just, we're all doing things remotely, so it was a Zoom or staff meeting, and I thought it went well. Not everybody spoke, but the head of our organization spoke, and the first thing he said was, "I am sorry that we hadn't done that. I'm sorry that we didn't do it right away." And that was okay. And then another member of the team sent me a lovely email doing the same thing, apologizing and saying how difficult that conversation was and thanking me for saying it. And she's a mother of boys. So, do you know, when you see how your boys are treated versus how someone else's son is treated, it's tough. And not everyone could receive that. Some people feel, you know, don't feel sorry for me. It wasn't like that. And I think we are going to be a stronger team because of that. And so because that conversation started when IEDC we had already met to discuss IEDC's position on the matter, on the social changes that were needed, on equity and things like that. When I brought it back, it was the same response, with compassion, with caring and understanding, and an immediate, yes, we'll do a letter. We would make a statement, a strong statement. And that letter went out very quickly. There was suggestions that we form a committee, and my director said, no, we won't form a committee. We'll get this done. And we got it done and sent it out. That proactive stance, I think, it just spoke volume for us as an organization, because our team and everyone that I've worked with on our board and everything, they are good people. And I know the compassion is there, and it's painful. We don't know. And what we found out is that a lot of people really didn't even know some of the things that we understand about what goes on in our community. And it's because we are not comfortable talking about it. So now I'm encouraged to speak more, because even with my church, we have a very diverse church community and people that are my best friends. We love each other. And they'd come and say, "I didn't know. I didn't never understood." And part of that I take responsibility for, because we're just as responsible to speak about our pain as we're expecting people to understand that we are in pain.
Marva, you are blowing me away. And I am so thankful for your vulnerability and your realness right here, because it is very important for everyone to hear your voice and to understand. So thank you for taking the energy to educate others and to have those really difficult conversations. I want to segue just slightly into a different question that still applies, because we normally ask a question that talks about what advice you have for yourself 10 years ago. But in light of this year, it seems more fitting to keep it recent. However you want to relate this, whether it's COVID or in your case, you are fighting actively for that equity, that inclusion, that acceptance What is advice you would have given yourself at the start of 2020 to better prepare yourself for what you have been through?
Advice I'd give myself, take a long vacation with my family and loved ones. Maybe invite a few friends to come along. Take a long vacation at the beginning of 2020, especially with regard to COVID-19. I think that's the one thing that I would do, yeah, is take time,
spend time, unwind,
be more unwind
before it all ramps up.
Yes. And now that I know where I am with regards to, I've always spoken up about equity issues. I'm in my community every day doing that. We had started a group in IEDC just to deal with poverty issues in communities and how we can use our talents to help those communities. I would have been a lot more forthcoming in pushing our group to just activate instead of taking time. Because now that with COVID-19, it's really set us back. We've got a lot of work to do, but COVID-19 has just set us back. Everyone is so busy in their own communities, just trying to address the issues in their communities, that we have not been able to get back to that as an important item. But because of the killings, it's become even more urgent. Mm-hmm. And the position that IEDC as an organization has taken, we are working harder on the diversity issue and how we ensure that we are intentionally, even more so intentionally, dealing with issues of diversity and equity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's just what you said. Sometimes things arise where it's an immediate fire that needs to be put out, but COVID has really brought about the need to have these deeper conversations because it's disproportionately affecting the minority populations.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to end this super powerful interview. And again, I'm so thankful for your candid words and your lessons that I'm learning right here, listening to you. But I want to give you a chance to brag a little bit. What is the one thing in your career that you are most proud of right now?
Do you know, recognizing that the poor will always be with us, that's scriptural. I never understood it never made sense to me. The poor will always be among you. And so I thought, what kind of God is this? The poor, I mean, knowing how hard it is for the poor. I mean, I grew up very poor. I don't mind telling people because I'm just so thankful for where I am today. But I walked 6 miles to school when I was just going into elementary school.
Oh my gosh.
Our whole community, that was what the community did. We didn't know any different. As kids, it was an adventure. Every day going to school was an adventure. We had no shoes, so it was what we did. So I know poverty. But coming into economic development as a career, I saw a sign that said, disrupt poverty. And it immediately hit me what that meant. All these years I struggled with, why do we have so much poverty? Mm-hmm. And it had nothing to do with money. You can't throw money at the issues that we have. And it really does start with compassion, with seeing yourself in somebody else's place and seeing what changes can be made. And I understood disrupting poverty really means, what does disrupt mean? If you want to disrupt something, you've got to change it radically. You've got to get in front of it. And you've got to, sometimes you have to stand in the way and just be there to brace yourself and say, no, this isn't going to happen anymore. And so I've taken that on as my mantra, disrupt poverty. And I've gotten bold and I've talked to people about it and they get it, because I think everybody wants to be a part of that type of change. And so what's happening today with what coronavirus is teaching us and what has happened because of all the deaths that we were confronted with and that we have to deal with, and the fact that it's not just our voices alone that are crying out, that it's everywhere in the world, we have the opportunity to truly disrupt poverty. legacy poverty. People, there will always be poor people, and I understand that now. There will always be poor people. But we shouldn't accept legacy poverty generation after generation after generation as the norm. Mm-hmm. And that realization for me has really changed my life in a lot of ways. So I think that I would say that is the, for me, that's the most important thing.
I love that. Marva, what an excellent thought to end on, because that is economic development. We strive to provide opportunity for everyone.
It is. That's the heart of economic development.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate your insights and your wisdom.
Thank you, Faye. I really do appreciate it.
Hey everyone, I'm here today with Steve Jast, who is the president and founder of Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. Hey Steve, it's great to speak with you today. As one of the leading voices in investment attraction and lead generation, what has stuck out the most for you over the past few months?
Hi Faye, thanks so much for the question. First and foremost, let me say that I love the content that Consultant Connect has been generating. I'd also like to take a second to wish all of our listeners continued good health. Every day is really a new adventure. We're seeing some sad stories of industries and companies in steep, unexpected decline, and we're also seeing areas of growth and opportunity. A couple of areas that have generated significant strategic discussion center around supply chain and reshoring. To help economic developers blend these into their strategic plans moving forward, we've been providing complementary data pools and access to our Gazelle AI platform.
That's really awesome, Steve. I'm sure this data has helped many economic development organizations. Can you explain how exactly Gazelle AI helps?
Sure. Yeah, great question, Faye. Our platform includes supply chain data for over 900 industries with related company listings. We also have complete company hierarchies, meaning users can build lists of companies that have an HQ in a specific state or country with manufacturing activities in other specific countries. This is ideal for economic recovery planning, reshoring business attraction strategies, understanding local supply chains, and overall investment attraction.
Wow, thanks, Steve. Hey, everyone, if you would like to activate your complimentary access to Gazelle AI, connect with Steve by emailing him at Steve, STEVE, at gazelle.ai. That's Steve at gazelle.ai. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Tune in again next week for more insight and relevant content to the issues impacting economic development today. America's Jobs Team podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.